Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pevitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
Hey, it's Vicky here, the love coach of the Project Love duo. In episodes like this, the one today, where you have me as your host, I really focus on love, dating, and relationships, specifically what it takes to create a relationship you love and the journey of getting ready for love. I love having deep and meaningful conversations with people on these topics and having real people come onto the podcast and share their real love stories. And I'm so excited to share one of those stories with you today. Today's episode is a real love story interview with Alexandra Gill, who reflects on her journey of going from someone who was single for her whole adult life, in her words, and thinking that a relationship just wasn't going to happen for her, to going through the journey of getting ready for love and marrying her best friend. Her wedding was just last month. It's such a magical story. I was actually moved to tears on a number of occasions because I know the courage that it takes to open up your heart, to trust and to commit to love, particularly when you've lost faith in love, which was where Alex was back in 2016. This is a story of hope and courage, and I really can't wait for you to listen to it. And before you do, I wanted to let you know that just this week, I've opened up the doors to new love coaching clients. And I have a handful of spots for you to work with me one-on-one across the autumn season. This Get Ready for Love coaching program is my absolute heart and soul, and it would be such an honor to work with you if you're feeling the call and if you're wanting to make 2020 the year that you get ready for love and create the kind of relationship that you dream of. A handful of spaces onto the autumn Get Ready for Love coaching program have just opened up. If you'd love to take one of those places and join me on that journey of transformation, then I would love to hear from you. Simply head on over to loveprojectlove.com/lovecoaching for all of the details and how to get in touch. I'll also add the link to the show notes. And so onto the podcast. Here is the beautiful love story of Alexandra Gill. I hope you enjoy it. So, Alex, it's such a pleasure and honour to have you on the podcast sharing your real love story. So, where would you like to begin?
Well, I think I would like to begin in 2016. And 2016 actually started off in quite a difficult way for me. And It was a difficult, weird and magical year is how I would describe it, because it started off difficult. It got, then got worse. And then by the end of it, things had completely transformed for me. I looked into the Project Love stuff as well, and I have spent some time reflecting recently on how that really helped me and how that really helped give me the tools to make the changes. So 2016 started off with me not feeling that great, and my granddad had died the previous year and things were difficult and things at work were very unsettled. I was a teacher and the school was gearing up for a second round of really, really horrible redundancies, and we could feel it. We could feel it coming. It was, you know, the writing was on the wall there. I started the year thinking, I want to make some changes here because there is something that is not clicking for me about my life, if that makes sense. And I was getting these awful headaches. I'd sit in lessons and think, oh my God, my head is absolutely banging. This is not making me a great teacher, actually. There's something very, really, really distracting me. And then in the April and the May, my department actually were one that went through redundancy, and although I kept my job, I actually ended up with a promotion. I had a faculty job from it. That was really, really upsetting and really hard. And then, because I felt like I had not been through quite enough stress, I decided to put my house on the market. Because I think at that point I thought, you know what, you only live once. I want more space. I want a bigger house. Let's just go for it. So then the summer was spent trying to sell my house. I duly did sell it. And I actually bought a new build property. It's amazing, lovely, gorgeous property where I got to choose my own kitchen, and I chose all the flooring, and it was absolutely perfect for me and my two dogs. But because of the timing of it, I really didn't want to lose the people who were buying my house. It was really important that I didn't, because I would have lost my other house if I had. So I actually moved in with my mum for 2 months. And I think, to be honest, if I'm being really truthful, I just, at that point, really needed looking after. Really did. And for years, I'd been this sort of fierce, independent person. And I think I just needed to go. I needed to go home. And I was literally only home for 1 week. And then I met Rich, who is my now husband. Hilariously, how you introduce yourself. Hi, I'm Alex. Where do you live? I promise you, I lived alone for 7 years. I promise I did. I even took him to my old house to try and prove to him. But I'm currently living with my parents. But things with him progressed quite quickly, and he made me, we can talk about this later, but he made me feel really secure in a way that I hadn't. I mean, I have the most hilarious dating stories that are just quite frankly ridiculous, and they weren't getting me anywhere. They were only making me feel worse about my situation. So it really was a journey. That whole year was a journey of transformation, of trying to realign myself and put myself first and look after myself and give myself some self-love. That's what it was about, actually. You know, I think we spend a lot of time looking for others to validate us or others to love us, when in actual fact we have that power. You just have to unlock it. And I think that's what Project Love helped me do. I just really looked at the life that I was living and thought, could there be more to this? And, you know, I had I was successful in my career. I had my own house, you know, cars, dogs, horses, all the rest of it. So amazing horses. Friends. And horses, yeah.
Wow.
And horses, yeah. And so I, on the surface of it, had everything I ever wanted, really. And I think there's something, isn't it? I don't know whether it's a cultural thing or whether it's a female thing, where to almost ask for more or to want more almost feels like you're ungrateful for what you do have. And I had been single for, I mean, this I'm sure is a familiar story to a lot of people. I'd been single for forever, really. I'd never had a proper, meaningful relationship. And I didn't, my attitude, which I now recognise is not very helpful, was that I don't want to spend my whole life sort of desiring something that might not exist in the world for me. You know, I watched my friends get married. I was bridesmaid. That was all very lovely, and was okay in my single status, because I thought, you know, it might just be that that's my journey, is to be on my own. And I don't want to waste my time or waste my energy or upset myself by thinking, actually, could there be something else or something more? And the same with my career as well. So I trained to teach. I've been teaching 10 years. And as I said, I had a faculty position, and that was great. But it wasn't entirely what I wanted to do. I'd always felt that teaching would be a great stepping stone to something else, a stepping stone into the university sector, which is where I now am. But making that leap is quite tough, because you think, what am I throwing away here? So my journey really throughout that whole year was allowing myself to ask for more. And that's hard, actually. That takes guts, because you think, I'm not ungrateful for what I have or what I've built myself, but there could be more out there. And actually, Rich taught me that. He said quite early on into our relationship, he told me this story of how he'd been on a cricket tour somewhere exotic, because he's an amazing traveller. It's one of the things that I really, really like about him. And he was having a conversation, and somebody said to him, how long do you think you'll do these cricket tours for? And he basically said, until something better comes along. And I thought that's actually an incredible thing to say, because you have this incredible life where you travel around the world, but you're willing to to bet that there still could be something else more amazing for you, and that could be meeting someone or whatever. And I remember him telling me that. He told me that in the context of you're that something better. And that was incredible for me to hear. But actually, more than that, I was like, wow, what a brave thing to have your heart out there where you think, he loves travelling, he loves cricket. But the fact that he could meet someone and that could sort of alter his path, I was quite floored by his bravery, actually.
Mm. That's something that you'd mentioned in your email about his strength and his bravery and how inspiring that is to you.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He really put himself out there when we got together and was very, very clear about how he felt about us and where the relationship was going. And the really nice thing about that for me was that it then gave me the space to really think about how I felt about him. And I think in relationships that I've been in the past, if people don't make you feel secure, then you spend a lot of time chasing them and chasing what, you know, do they like, do they not? And you don't actually then think, you don't have the space to think, do I actually want to be with this person?
Mm.
Because you're too busy chasing them around.
Mm, yeah, focusing on whether they like you and how they feel about you rather than asking a different question, which is, how do I feel around them?
Absolutely.
How does my energy feel around them? Yeah. How much am I laughing around this person or smiling? Do I feel relaxed around this person and calm? Or am I actually just quite anxious and, you know, my energy is really sort of constricted and I feel tense? That's a really good point, like asking yourself those different questions. So you can assess how you feel.
Absolutely.
Is this person displaying qualities and traits that I'm really looking for in a partner?
Yeah.
And that, I think, changes your whole experience.
It does. It really does. And also, one of the exercises that I did that I found really interesting, and I think I took weeks thinking about this, was the thinking of a couple that you like, or that something about their relationship that you like. And it took me ages to pick one, which sounds awful, doesn't it? It sounds really awful, that. It took me quite a long time, but I was really examining what it was about couples that made me think, actually, no, I probably would quite like that. And what it was in the end was the couple who I really felt were just really great friends, who just bounced off each other and were just obviously, like, clearly fancied each other too, but just really, really great mates. And I was like, that's what I want, actually. I just want a really, really, a friend that I just cannot be without, because they just bring out the best in me. And that is definitely the capers that we get up to. Definitely what I found. Yeah, definitely.
And so you're working through exercises on your Get Ready for Love journey.
Yeah.
And you were starting to get clear on what it is that you wanted from your future relationship, and realizing that friendship is something that you really want. You know, which is the foundation, I think, to a happy and healthy relationship, a really solid friendship. And so you're getting clear on that. What else were you doing sort of along the way, or what were you learning?
I was also taking myself out on dates, and really enjoying that, really enjoying my own company. I think that's quite important, you know, to sort of assess what you're bringing to the table here in a relationship. And I can remember one of the first ones that I went on, I took myself, it's not even like a particularly exotic date, but they'd just opened a Pizza Express in Stoke. So I went along and sat there and had several starters. There was hardly anybody else in the restaurant apart from me. And I was just like, this is really great. I'm just going to sit here and enjoy myself and be waited on. And it was just really, really nice. It didn't feel awkward or anything. It felt empowered, really, more.
Yeah.
Sort of not waiting around for other people to take you out. Like, actually, I will go. I will do what I want to do.
Mm. Love that.
Yeah.
And I bet it's realising, I'm great company.
Yeah,
this is fun.
That was it. And because I'd come from quite a low place at the start of the year as well, to do these nice things for myself, I think that was a really, really good thing to do.
Yeah.
And it was stressful around the time I was trying to sell my house and things. That's, I mean, that was all that could push anybody over the edge. And so just to give myself a bit of time. And the other thing I did was I joined a Basset Hound group I have a basset hound, and I took him to quite, they meet up fairly regularly for walks, and it's lovely to see all the breed together. And so I was going on those walks, and that was really great too, just meeting different people. And because we spoke before about how small your world can become. And I only lived 20 minutes away from the school that I worked at. So I would literally just go 20 minutes down the road, teach all my lessons, do whatever, come home. And I had friends in Manchester and stuff that I would go out with and things. But my world was quite constricted. And, you know, your pool of opportunities for meeting people and things is fairly small. As it, ironically, Richard actually did come from the town in which I taught at. So he was in my circle, actually, the whole time. But timing, you know, timing had to be right, I think. And it wasn't right until the moment that I met him.
And so you'd been in the same circles.
We had.
But for 8 years, you were saying, before we started recording, 8 years in the same circles, but you'd never actually until you felt ready.
And I think there was one occasion where we had met, but we could only vaguely remember it a few years previously. And then my friend, because I was introduced through a girl who I went to school with, actually, and a lad who, she was married to a lad who he went to school with. And when we were introduced, she'd been trying since the May of 2016 to get us together. And if we'd been introduced in May, that would have been a complete disaster, because that was right in the middle of all my redundancy stuff and then trying to sell my house. So I just would not have had the headspace for him. And as it turned out, we were introduced in the October, just after I moved back in with my mum. And that was just perfect timing. That was because I had the space for him. I was ready at that point. I'd got myself to a position where I was like, right, okay, I'm opening my eyes and I'm letting this in for the first time. Mm. Really, I'd never been that open before.
And you were saying that you had made the decision to sell your place because you had felt that it was, and I don't know if this was conscious or unconscious, but it felt like if you had a space in which you could invite this partner in, then that would also sort of help on that journey of getting ready for love.
Absolutely. That's the interesting thing. There is a philosophy somewhere, and I have tried to Google it to find it. I don't know where it's come from, but it is in my head that you have to make space for this sort of stuff. And so I had bought this 4-bedroom house. For me and my two dogs.
And what are your dogs? You've got a basset.
Got a basset and a dachshund.
Oh,
so the dachshund was fine in my little 2-bedroom house, but the basset hound was taking up like the whole of the kitchen. So we needed a bigger place. And so when it was built, actually the first person who came through the door before the kitchen had been fitted or before the flooring was down or anything was Richard. It was, the timing was just incredible. So it has always felt to me like that's our house, really, because he's always been a part of that process of getting it. It was, you know, it's almost like the house that all my struggle built is there. We will move eventually, but I'll be sad when we do, because it's quite symbolic for me, that place, I think.
So a key phase of the Get Ready for Love journey, which actually is the first phase, is clearing a space to invite love in. And that's emotional space. So cleaning up any sort of limiting beliefs that could be holding you back.
Yeah.
Looking at any limiting narratives around finding love, around dating, relationships that you also need to clean up. And then letting go of old attachments, ex-relationships, and sort of letting that go and creating that emotional space for that new relationship. But also physical space as well. And it comes up in my client sessions quite a lot, where people realize that actually the home that I'm living in isn't a home where I want to invite somebody else into it. And so that can be a really big part of the process of finding love, getting ready for love, is preparing your home and creating it as a space in which you can invite that person in, whether it's just at the beginning, just clearing a drawer and space in your wardrobe. And then obviously the other sort of extreme end of the scale is moving home. And that's exactly what happened. That's amazing.
So we were together probably about 6 months after I'd moved into the new house. He moved in with me. And he was coming backwards and forwards a bit and staying over quite a lot and stuff. But because I had the dogs, I was a bit more restricted. I couldn't go and stay with him, really, because of the dogs. And he lived in catchment area as well, so I didn't want to be waking up in the morning and there's a student.
And you were saying that you felt ready when you you'd met him. How did you actually meet him?
We met at a pub, actually. So I had gone out for my friend's birthday and she'd said to me, don't book a taxi home early like you do. And I was like, all right, okay. I thought, all right then, I won't do it. And it was just after I'd moved and I was tired and I was like, oh God, I don't know whether I can really be bothered to get back. I thought I better have go because it is a birthday. Don't want to be a flaky friend. So we went along and he was having a very similar circumstance. So he was supposed to be going to a wedding reception. He was a bit tired. He was on the cusp of texting her to say, I'm not coming. And then he thought, no, come on, pull yourself together. So came, joined us for a drink. I bought him a beer. Apparently that went down really well. And we didn't talk that much, but it was just nice to meet another one of their friends. And then he went off to this wedding reception. And Lindsay, my friend, was texting him. And he came back. But by the time he came back, we were fairly lubricated. So we were having a whale of a time. And I don't remember us. We were sat opposite each other. And I don't remember us talking particularly, but I can just remember that he was nice and smiley. I can remember his smile. And then he the following day he added me on Facebook and then messaged me about 24 hours later, fairly late on in the evening, and all the message said was, fancy going out for a drink sometime. And I was absolutely, he knows this, I was absolutely outraged by this. I was like, what? Not even a hello or nice to meet you the other night or really, like, nothing, just straight to the point. And so and I think I was so used to like Tinder idiots just stringing you along with all this chat that then goes nowhere that I was just like, I can't believe he's being so direct. I can't believe it. And I went shopping with my mum because it was half term. We went to Cheshire Oaks, which is a fair drive from where we live, and so all the way there I was like, oh, I just can't believe it, I can't believe it. Just and my mother was sat there like rolling her eyes going, well, they can't really do right or doing wrong, can they? I mean, at least he's being up front, you know. And by the end of the drive home, because I was still wittering on about it, she was like, for goodness sake, Alex, you've got nothing better to do, just go on a date with him. And I was like, well, I suppose you might have a point. So then I replied to her. I made him wait 24 hours and replied and said, well, you're very forward. All right, then. And so we decided we'd go on a date. So that was on Monday and we went on the date on the Friday. I actually nearly cancelled the date because he wasn't really texted. I didn't really think he was that interested. But then got a bit busy and then didn't. And then he sent me a nice message sort of Thursday-ish saying, oh, I'm just trying to think of somewhere nice to go. So I was like, oh, okay, maybe he is vaguely interested. And then when we met, our first date was in a bar. And I walked in and looked at him and I just thought, oh, I'm such an idiot. If I'd cancelled this. And literally all the way there, I got Lindsay texting me saying, don't cancel him, don't cancel him, don't cancel him. My friend Simone, I was texting my friend Simone when I arrived at the bar and she said, oh, well done for like actually going. Like literally all these stupid things that I had in my head. And I walked in and I just felt so comfortable with him. And the really funny thing is there was loads of people at this bar. I'd suggested somewhere that would be outside of catchment so I wouldn't bump into any students because I didn't want an audience. And then ironically, the whole of his first cricket team were there.
So you've got a different audience.
His different audience and a few people that we knew. And people said afterwards, that wasn't your first date. Like, because we just looked so comfortable and I just was comfortable. And Mum, when I left and went back, it was quite nice because obviously Mum was there because I was living with her. And I said to her, I need to see him again. She was like, oh my God. And so right from the start, I was like, yep, we fit. And it feels really, really good and felt completely different to any, because I hated going on dates, hated them.
Yeah, so how often were you, or how active were you on the dating?
Not particularly. I would have like little sporadic bursts. And I knew in my heart that online dating wasn't going to work for me because I didn't like the going along, not knowing who you were meeting and all of that stuff. It felt too forced to me. But having said that, I had tried it. So this does come from a place of, you know, I'm not just saying that. You know, I had memberships to a few dating agencies that were fairly brief, and I'd done a bit of Tinder. I think Tinder, if you're outside of London, isn't so great because it's just random. It's not, there isn't a great pool of people. And I've been set up with people before by friends that hadn't really worked. To be honest, I would often go on dates and feel a bit at risk. They scared me a little bit. I think the people that I was ending up going on dates with were just not appropriate. And I didn't enjoy it at all. Until this one, I really didn't enjoy it.
And is that what surprised you?
It really surprised
and
me.
And your friends and mum.
Yeah. My friends absolutely couldn't believe it. Like, they were totally floored. I'm really happy. And Lindsay, who set us up, she's a bridesmaid. And there's a brilliant picture, actually, of her walking down the aisle. And I'd made her go last because I knew she'd get the timing of the song perfectly right. I knew I could trust her to do it. And she's walking down the aisle and the photographer's caught it. And I'm making, like, an okay sign to her.
Gosh.
And you could, because she's got the timing so perfect. And she says to me, that picture means so much more than just, well done for getting the timing perfect on that song. Because she found me this man. But when we met though, I was like, Lindsay, where have you been hiding him for all this time?
Oh my God, my whole body's just went all shivery and goosebumpy and my eyes are very, yeah. Had she tried to introduce you to him before?
She had tried to, yeah. And he actually wasn't in a play. I think he was pursuing somebody else at that point. But she hadn't given up. She was being tenacious. And I don't know whether she particularly thought that we would get on as well as we would. I think she just thought, you know, let's give this a go. Let's see. Mm. They're two people that I like. Let's see if it works.
Yeah.
And it did, yeah.
Mm.
So.
And you were saying when you met him, you were ready.
Yeah.
What do you think sort of contributed to that feeling of being ready?
I think I'd done a lot of work on myself to get ready and to really think about what it was that I wanted. And it was a very long journey for me to admit that I actually did want to be in a relationship. Because for years and years, I just thought, you know, the idea of being a wife, I had this big thing about being a wife. I just absolutely just did not want to be a wife. It was quite a complex, being a wife in my family is quite a complex thing. My parents split when I was 17. They both remarried. My dad's going through a second divorce. And my grandma and granddad on my mum's side had a very traditional sort of relationship. My grandma on my dad's side was widowed at 40, so she was a big matriarch. My master's degree is in women's studies and feminist research. So, you know, it's a very complex mix of things. I've sort of looked at a lot of marriages and thought they're a bit too patriarchal for me. They're not really how I would want to design my life. But Rich is very switched on about that. You know, he won't refer to me as, he doesn't use the sentence my wife, because he says, you're not my wife, you're not my possession. Instead, he calls me the wife. So I have to be very careful that I call him the husband.
He'll be listening out in this podcast.
Will she? Will she get it? I'm trying really hard. and I think when I met him, when we were talking about getting married, I absolutely knew that I wanted to sign that piece of paper, that I absolutely did want to be his wife, but a wife. I don't know how to describe it in a way that isn't ownership based or objectifying. But yeah, I had absolutely no doubt. So for anybody listening who's thinking, I don't think I really like being like marriage or, you know, the patriarchy of that, I was right there with you, and I still agree to an extent. You know, I do think there was one person in the world that I've ever want to marry, and that was him, because he understood my feelings towards it, and was like, well, that's, you know, almost sort of made it okay, I suppose.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so how did things develop then from that first date where you just felt so at ease with this person, so yeah, comfortable with this person and secure?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was an immediate thing or something that grew. Was that really different? That first date, was that really different to other first dates that you'd been on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It felt like I already knew him, which was very strange. The level of me feeling comfortable with him, he felt familiar. And he couldn't have been familiar because we'd only met once and we hadn't properly talked and we hadn't texted that much in the lead up to it. But there was something on some level that I recognised. He then fairly soon after we got together went on a cricket tour to India. And he sent me over my birthday, actually, which is in December. And he sent me a lovely bunch of flowers with a lovely note. And I thought, oh, this is how thoughtful. And he'd made sure he'd posted my card so I would get it on my birthday. And I moved into my new house whilst he was in India, actually. And then he came back. We had Christmas together and made a lot of plans. And in fact, quite early on into the new year, my mum booked a holiday for us to all go to Croatia, my brother and his wife and my stepdad and a few others. And Richard came on board for that straight away. And we hadn't probably only been together a few months. And Richard's actually said to me that he was so touched that my mum had such faith in him that she did that she booked it and that she was like, yes, bring him. Of course, bring him. It's funny, isn't it, how you take cues off other people. You know, I was feeling braver about being in a relationship because of how he was with me. And obviously my mum somehow was transmitting something to him as well. It was like this cycle. Because he got to know her, obviously, much quicker than he would have done because he was seeing her when he was coming to pick me up for dates and things.
Oh, yeah, of course. she told him what she had said to you in the car, that shopping trip.
She said it in her wedding speech. It came up in the speech she made. And everyone in the room who were my friends were like, well, yeah, I mean, she had a point, didn't she?
You're like, thanks, Mum.
Yeah. So she likes to take credit for us going on that first date as well as Lindsay, because she says, yeah, well, I made her do it because, you know, she's just being stupid about it. And then, he moved in probably about 6 months or so into our relationship. Mm. And then we went away Christmas of 2017. To Cape Verde, and everybody was saying, oh, he's going to propose. And I thought, we had talked about getting married, so I sort of vaguely thought that this probably was where this was heading. But I thought, there's no way he's going to do it over Christmas and New Year. That's so cliche. That's not him at all. And so when we were away, he said to me, I'm not going to propose on this holiday, by the way, just so you know. But I am going to propose, and I have a time in mind. So I was like, okay. So that was nice. I thought, right, well, it's coming up, isn't it? That's good. And for some reason, I thought it was going to be much later in the year, which would have been 2018. And I should backtrack a little bit, actually. In the first sort of few months that we were together, he was training for the London Marathon. And then he did the London Marathon, whenever it is, April. Yeah, so April 2017. And I was like his cheerleader. And throughout the whole of the process, we came down to London the day before and had to collect his number and had to do all these things. I documented it all on Facebook because it was a sponsored place. So we wanted to get as much money as we could for cardiac risk for the young. And it was in memory of one of his friends who'd actually sadly died of an undetected heart defect. And that was really my introduction to all his friends, because there were quite funny posts that I was putting up of what he was doing. And then I was trekking across London trying to spot him. And you've got a tracker app, but you can't look at that and look at the runners running past you at the same time. It's completely impossible. So he ran past me. I didn't see him. It was just, oh, God, it was terrible. And then but anyway, so that was an amazing day. That really cemented our relationship, I think, because I was there for him throughout all of his training and everything, because it's really is killer, the London Marathon, because you're training over the winter and it's, you know, you don't have a lot of daylight to do your running. Anyway, so the following year, he was really keen to go back to the marathon. And I thought, all right, then let's go back, because this was the biggest achievement he felt he'd ever managed to do. He did it in a really good time. So we travelled down. And we were sort of walking around and I thought, he's going to try and show me how you can spot people and how it is possible. But he wasn't really paying that much attention. I thought, this is a bit strange. Like, I thought, I mean, this is perfect opportunity for him to show me how easy it is to do. And we were walking around and then we got to Tower Bridge. And I'd walked across Tower Bridge when I was trying to look for him. And it's great on marathon days, such a great atmosphere. And we tried to get up to the top to see people running past, and they weren't letting anybody up. And I thought, he's looking a bit suspicious here. What's he doing? And I said, let's just go underneath, because I'd walked underneath it as well. It was lovely as well, right by the Tower of London and things. And so we walked underneath the bridge and the lighting was beautiful. I was like, look at that tree, look at the bridge, look at that colour, look at this. I was trying to get my phone out to take a picture of this whole, and he was like, put your phone away. I'm like, but no, look at the tree, look at the sunlight coming through the tree. And he was like, just stop. And then got down on one knee, right in the middle of everybody. So people were walking past going, oh my God, look, what's happening? And he said, will you marry me? Apparently I paused. And I do remember pausing because I had this inner monologue going, oh my God, look what's happening. This is happening. This is happening right now. This is happening. This is actually occurring. And then he was like, well, will you? I was like, of course I will. And he had timed it to the perfect, to the exact second that he'd finished the marathon the previous year. So he'd made, because he said that was the moment that he knew that how much he loved me and that he had to marry me. So he linked it. And he said it came to him as well. I said, this is an amazingly well thought out proposal. And he said, literally, it came to him in the dream the night before. He knew he was going to do it on marathon day. He'd got the ring, but the time. So on our wedding invitations, the moment I walked down the aisle was the same time. It was 13:59 and however many seconds. I should note that. That's terrible. I'm not good with numbers. And so the poor wedding planner was like, oh, my God, how am I going to make sure that you get down the aisle at that exact time? Yeah. I got him a pair of cufflinks with that time on it. So that's like symbolic time. For him, and a little quirk on our wedding invitations that I would walk down the aisle at essentially that exact time.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I love all the symbols and all these sort of moments that have been so important along the way.
Yeah.
And you had shared before about how much you've both helped each other to grow as individuals, and how you've been supporting him with the marathon and the training, and he's been supporting you with your career change.
And that's the thing, that's the thing that I think I didn't realize that you could get, I suppose, in a relationship, is having a cheerleader, essentially having that person. In fact, I did, when I did a speech at my mum's wedding back in 2007, one of the things that I said to them there was, there was a film that I'd watched and it was talking about marriage, and marriage, basically you are promising to be somebody's witness and that their life won't go unnoticed. And that I'd always wanted that, I think, to feel like there was somebody there that was noticing and inspiring me to be more and do more, because he really does do that. You know, I probably eventually would have got round to changing my career, but probably not before teaching had finished me off completely. And he was like, you have to do this. You have to. And whatever happens, you know, the money isn't an issue. This is about you and your life and your dreams. And I think when it came to making that big jump, because it is a big thing to leave, you know, I was an established teacher there for 10 years, to leave this little town, which I did adore as well, and the kids, it was hard to leave them. But he made me feel like it would be okay. And I thought, I can do this leap of faith, because I've done it before with him. And that really was a leap of faith. But it felt okay. And it was the same thing. And the universe... It's a funny thing, I said to you before, didn't I? There were signs everywhere. And I even phoned my mum up and said, I feel like something is shifting in the universe for me, and this is going to be okay. And even if this isn't the job for me, even though it did turn out to be the one, something else is going to happen. I could, even people I was bumping into on the street to talk to, it was very odd the way things were happening. I said, the signs are stacking up. And the interview, I didn't think it had gone that well. I honestly didn't think it had gone that well. My feedback was, I was very impressive. So I was like, okay, clearly I've got no idea. But yeah, and I think you have to try and spot the signs. Be open to the signs that actually things are changing. Things will change, but they're changing because you put it in motion. This isn't a random axe. This is the fruits of your labour that started with me way back, like 3 years ago. The seed of the bud of the change was there. Just seeing it through. Yeah. And the other really magical thing is that at the end of 2016, so this incredible roller coaster of a year, Richard and I went and spent a night in the Hilton Hotel in Manchester. And that's quite an iconic, the Beetham Tower was quite iconic in Manchester, very tall building. And I'd met him, he was working in Manchester at the time, and we'd sort of ambled down Deansgate towards the hotel and got there just as the sun was setting. And you know that in the winter you have those incredible sunsets that are like rainbow sky. I thought, my goodness, Manchester is beautiful. And we just stood there looking at this sunset, and I took a picture of him looking out of the window. And this picture is probably one of the most special pictures that I have. I've got it up in my living room, very, very rapidly put it up in my living room. And he's looking out into the city. And I had essentially taken a picture of my future, because not only is he in it, the direction he's looking, that we were both looking in, is the direction of the building of the university that I now work in.
Oh, wow.
It's just absolutely incredible. This gorgeous sky. And we were looking because we could see one of the supermarkets that's like behind the building. I can remember looking at it. Isn't that amazing? I do believe in magic. I'm one of these slightly crazy people. But I could feel it. I could feel the magic there. And I took a picture. I captured my future in that photograph, which is extraordinary, isn't it? Mm. 2 years later, I was rocking up to join them at the university.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing. It reminds me of that quote, I think it's by Steve Jobs, that you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect the dots looking back.
Yeah.
So how would you describe your relationship today?
Very fulfilling in a lot of ways. Very supportive, mutually. I support him a lot too. It's funny how things fit together, because my dogs, he'd grown up always wanting a dog, and now he is daddy of two dogs and they love him. It's really, really wonderful. I had to meet somebody who was an animal lover, and my animals were my non-negotiable. Cricket is his non-negotiable, and I completely accept that, because I think, you know, you want to go and play cricket, go and play cricket. I want to go and ride my horse with my mother. That's what I do. That's part of intrinsic part of being me, just as much as his love of sport and things is intrinsic part of him.
Just as a side note, Alex is actually about to go to the Oval to meet Rich, because he's already over there for the last day of the Ashes, and she's popped out to come and do this podcast interview because we took advantage of you being in London today, so we could actually do this podcast in person. But you're actually from Stoke-on-Trent.
Well, I'm from Cheshire originally, but yes, live in Stoke.
Mm.
Work in Manchester. So yeah, this is a northern love story.
Yeah, and we actually weirdly discovered that we went to the same high school in Cheshire, because yes, that's where I'm from, where I was born. And just as we were wandering over to the space where we were recording this, we were talking about growing up and schools, and we realised, wow, we went to the same high school in Cheshire, in Northern England.
Of all of the schools in all of the world, that is weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really strange. Just going back to your earlier point of it being such a small world.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very small.
It really is. It really is. And I think that's another reason why I contacted you, and I put this in the email, to put a bit of love back your way, because I think that, you know, you do the Project Love is so powerful. I think that you should know that at the extent to which we never met before today. Well, maybe we had at school, who knows? But I think that it's important that you know what a difference that it is making across the country. It can't just be me that got affected by this, that it really helped. It's a powerful thing, really good thing.
Thank you. Yeah.
And you know, in my wedding, in the wedding reception, I did a speech, and I said actually about the power of belonging in a place, and how you can feel drawn to a place. And I felt very drawn to the little town that I, and to the whole Staffordshire Moorlands where I taught. And I felt for a long time that I was in the right place. Despite my struggles and things, I still held on to this belief that I was in the right place. And I was, because Richard was there. I just had to find him. But the really interesting thing was that there were guests at my wedding. There were three families at my wedding, whose daughters I'd taught at the school. His witness, I taught her sister sociology right at the start of my career. And I said, it was almost feels to me like there's this rare kind of magic. And if the town could have given me a gift, it's honestly what it felt like. The town, all this working so hard there for those children and for those families, and really loving them. There's something about the Moorlands people that I was drawn to immediately. They're just, I said in my leaving thing that I wrote for the school, that they're some of the most accidentally hilarious people you'll ever meet. They're really funny. And it felt like karma, actually. It felt like I got back what I had put in.
Mm.
And then I suppose then it was the right time to leave.
Mm.
Felt like, yeah, that's okay. I can draw a line under that. But the people that were at my wedding, you know, that my story with them went back much longer than that. It's weird, isn't it? I think it's quite magical.
And the love that you've been putting into that community.
Yeah.
And the love that we've also been getting back from that community.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. You had said as well in your email that the values that you love about this community are also the values that he possesses.
He really does. He really does. He models the very best of what I have seen across all the years that I've taught there. They're very loyal people. They're very direct people. They're very friendly and they're kind people. And he has all of those, but he also embodies so much more than that town. You know, I felt like I spent so much of my career trying to make these students broaden their horizons and make them see beyond Staffordshire. And yes, just go to university, get out there or go and travel or see things, and trying to make them, because people don't tend to leave this little town because it's a nice place to be, you know, but there is a big wide world out there. And Rich had been out there and discovered it as a boy that grew up there. He had the vision to get on the plane on his own, go out there to, I don't know, Sri Lanka or wherever it was, on his own, and ended up sitting near to some people that have become lifelong friends. I'm not convinced. I mean, I know that they all like cricket, but I think they like each other more. And I think that's why they get together, you know, the Barmy Army, the core of the Barmy Army. They adore each other. And I said in my wedding speech as well, you know, thank God that he said he couldn't get married without them. They had to be there. These are the people that know him the best, the people that he's picked up on his travels. Mm. I was like, thank God you came. Thank God you came to the wedding. This could have been a disaster. Imagine if the Ashes had been on that weekend. Oh, God.
Oh, God. So they had to say yes as well as you saying yes.
Yeah, they did. They did. But I think that says so much about him as a person, that on his travels, he hasn't just... he's been so present that he's picked up these people who mean so much to him. And one of whom was his best woman at the wedding. Yeah, I know I was marrying the right man when he told me he wanted a best woman.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yes, and she is amazing.
Love that.
Yeah.
And she's there. She's over in Vauxhall today, isn't she? You're going to join her and him after this recording.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you a question as we sort of wrap up now. I could literally talk to you all day long, just FYI. But conscious of time, we're getting close to an hour. So I'm just going to ask you a few questions I always ask everyone who comes onto the podcast and shares their real love story. And that is, what do you think are the key ingredients of a happy and healthy relationship?
I would say mutual respect for each other's desires and passions. And I'm quite lucky, I think, that my career actually takes quite a driving seat in our relationship. He made it clear that he would follow me if I had to go to a different university. It's just worked out well that it's ended up being a local one. And mutual respect for their values and their passions and things. I would say fun has to come into it. Really doing things with each other, making time for each other. We tend to have, through the wedding and the summer and stuff, we've done lots of stuff together, but as things settle down and we're back at work and things, we have a date night every week to really, where the TV isn't on, and we really talk to each other and invest in each other in that way. So if I've got mutual respect, and passion. because passion, actually, it links to being authentic. And I think if you're being, one way of showing or being authentic is by really, really embracing what you are passionate about. And, you know, before I met Richard, I was passionate about a lot of things. I'm really passionate about teaching. I'm really passionate about sociology. I'm really passionate about my animals, all animals, really. And so really just embrace being passionate about another human being. And I've done that. You know, I have great friends. I have, you know, fab family and stuff. But to have that one person that you're like, oh my God, you're amazing. I just want to shout this from the rooftops. And just being really liberated. It's a liberating feeling, like, you know, to be able to say that. And I think actually that really does demonstrate how far I've come.
And that takes so much courage.
Yeah. To put yourself out there. Because yeah. It's an investment in someone who, you know, up until this point, I've only ever been let down by these men. And so to invest in someone that much, yeah, you're right, it's brave. It has to come from a place of strength and security, I think.
Did it feel that because you met him at a time when you had perhaps started to lose faith, but it was your close friends and mum that sort of nudged you, or they were sort of reminding you, don't lose faith.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, they'd always said that to me, and I just never listened. And at that point, I did listen. And that made a big difference. Their support through it all. And it's funny because I listened to the other podcast that you did, the True Love Story one, with Lauren, and she didn't. You said that she didn't really remember where she struggled to remember how she had been before she started a coaching with you. And I do remember. I remember everything. I remember every single feeling, every single doubt. I remember who I was because I cherish her. Because it was her bravery that has got me here. She is so important to me, that the version of myself that I was. I started my wedding speech with the words, this is going to sound a bit of a strange place to start, but for my heart, I have to start here. And I said, before we met, I was on my own for a long time. And that was okay, because I was busy learning and dreaming and developing an understanding of myself and my passions and my ambitions. And actually, I think for a lot of people, they don't give themselves that space. I wasted a lot of that time by sort of not being particularly having these stupid beliefs and closing myself off. And I think if I could finish this interview with one last little story. I picked a poem for Mum to read. I'm very close to my mum, as I'm sure you can probably tell. And Richard adores her as well, which is good. And I picked a poem for her to read for me at the wedding. She's the only person that made me cry at the wedding, I will say, when she read this poem and then when she did a speech later on. And the poem is called For Now by Tracy Emin. And the last line of it says, Mum practiced it a lot before she read it, and she really wanted to get the intonation of the last line right, because if you say it slightly differently, it means something different. So the line is, let me love you just the way you are. So you can say it like that, or you can say it, let me love you just the way you are. And that is a conscious decision to let me love you. We build these walls, don't we? We build these walls against love. And I knew mine were there, actually. I knew they were there, and they were there for a variety of reasons, you know, because I got very hurt when I was 17. I promised my heart that I wouldn't let that happen again. Oh, I'd had these awful experiences, and they were just teaching me bad things about love. I was a child of divorce and thought, I don't want that in my life. I'd rather not bother than have that pain. But even through that, you know, I had this little seed of hope that, and it was very buried, but I knew it was still there, that somebody would come along and they would break the walls down. What I didn't realise was that that person would be me and that I would break down those walls. And that actually when I was provoked by Richard, definitely, to break them down, but they became irrelevant with him. He just walked in through the front door, because by that stage, I was like, I am absolutely ready for this. And you are the person who I trust enough to give you my heart. And this is what Mum said in her speech. She said, Alex doesn't give her heart easily. She centred it all around my pony that I'd had when I was a child. Which the minute she said Brio's name, I was sobbing. She knew that that was a way in. And I don't give my heart easily, but when I do, then you get the whole lot of it. And he got the whole lot of it. Let me love you just the way you are. And we are scared, aren't we, that just the way we are somehow isn't enough. But it is enough when you meet the person who is right.
Mm. Wow, I'm so moved by that, as you can hear in my voice. I talk a lot about wholeheartedness in my coaching, and it's something that Brené Brown talks about a lot. And I think that there is this tendency to close our heart if we've been hurt in the past, to close and put up our walls around our heart to protect us from hurt and pain. And so opening up, taking down those walls and opening up, it feels like a risk, and it is a risk, but the benefits always outweigh the cost. And it's better to be wholehearted and go all in with something, with dating, with a person, with love, with in a relationship, and risk getting hurt. Because if you always put up these walls because you're so scared of getting hurt, then you'll never experience what it feels like, what you just described, what it feels like to go all in and love with your whole heart. So I just think that that's beautiful. I'm going to ask you one final question. What advice would you give to someone who may be listening, who maybe they're dating or maybe they're not, but they dream of having a relationship like yours? What advice would you give to them?
My brother gave me some advice, actually, which again I mentioned in my speech. And this piece of advice, it's like a little a seed. I know so many people that were at the wedding have passed it on to other people, and it's really quite insightful. And he said to me, not that long actually before I met Richard, in a rare moment at which I was willing to talk about my relationship status, because I wouldn't really let people talk to me, particularly my family. I was like, I just close it off. I just don't want to talk about it. And he said, he's getting to you as fast as he can. And I love that notion of the fact that actually, and you can see in my story, it was about timing. Timing was everything there. And I was getting to him as fast as I can as well, but I had a journey to do, and he had a journey to do as well. He was single himself for a very long time. And if it's, I think so often actually relationships don't work because somebody isn't ready, and it might be you that's not ready. And it might just be that you just need to go off and work on yourself and love yourself and look after yourself. And think about what is it that you want out of your life? And professionally, is that happening? And if it's not, then maybe work on that for a bit. Or in terms of where you're living, is that working? Or perhaps you should tweak, maybe just a few little tweaks and change things and create that space that we were talking about earlier. Or, and then maybe you'll be ready to let somebody in. But it's not going to happen before you've, or you're not going to have a fulfilling relationship until you've got your things and your ducks in a row, until you're in the right headspace. And I just love that. He's getting to you as fast as he can. The idea that the universe is working on it, they're trying to give it you because they know it's what you want, but you've just got to admit it to yourself first. And that's what I really struggled with, to admit that actually, maybe I do want a bit more out of my life. As I said before, I didn't want to come across as being ungrateful.
Because you can be grateful for what you have, but still want more.
But still want more. And that was a massive, massive realisation for me. Never stop wanting more. And it's not because you're not happy with what you've got. It's just that there could be something that could come along and add a bit more value.
And that's the best place to build on, gratitude.
Yes. Yeah. So that would be my advice. He's getting to you as fast as he can. But what can you do in the meantime to really work on yourself and help yourself and love yourself and stop being so horrible to yourself? Because at times I was horrible to myself. I wouldn't have been friends with me if I was me, if that makes sense, at points. Because I was nicer to the students I was teaching and to my own friends than I was to myself. So really examine that. That would be my advice. And don't panic, because my God, if it can happen for me, it can happen for anybody. And people's life courses, you know, move at different paces. So Richard and I will be 37, both of us will be 37 at the end of the year. So it's taken me, you know, 37 years to be ready for this. You know, it might take you another 20 on top of that. That's okay. All the experiences and all the things you learn in between that time will not be wasted.
It's all progress. It's all valuable. All of the learnings along the way.
Definitely. Yeah.
Alex, thank you so, so much for sharing your story, for sharing all of those wonderful lessons and insights. It's so inspiring to hear your story, especially because the Ashes is happening as we speak and you're here with me while Rich is over there in Vauxhall. I so appreciate you taking the time.
I'm hoping that he's going to be in a pub now. So
thank you so much.
That's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoy this episode, and if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say best podcast ever. Thank you.